I think it's going to be a short one today. I've got very, very little.
Okay. Well, we got some stuff to talk about.
All right. Let me set up for the Seahawks game to record. And turn off my F1 race. And done. And I guess I'll move over to NFL Today. Okay. Set up straight. Welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I am Matt.
And I am Ricardo.
And we apologize for the low quality of my end of things. We're unable to get Skype to work better than a free over-the-internet VoIP program.
Unable to get it to work better than two tin cans stretched with a string between them.
And I'm using a decent mic, so...
Yeah.
As we've discussed in the past, I think the solution is waiting till I actually get an improved computer and make some moves on my end.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we discuss things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest, movies, TV, DVD, and video games and computer. And yet I have to confess to complete and utter failure to actually see any movies.
I was thinking about last night. I just was too tired and had something else to work on, so I didn't bother.
Well, the kingdom is out there, even though it's certainly, you know, as we discussed last week, had this knock about it's basically CSI Riyadh and it's not doing as well dollar-wise at the box office as one might expect, and suddenly there's just people are a little bit down on it.
Well, Jesse James is out, too.
That's true, and it's actually playing at one of our local North End theaters.
I almost went and saw it, even though it's like 3 hours. It was playing at 11. I thought, do I really want to get home at 2 in the morning? And I realized, no, I don't.
But if you talk about a film that is absolutely 100% guaranteed to make our friend Mark fall asleep, especially at 11 o'clock.
He should just take a pillow.
I don't need to see it to tell you that that is a 100% guarantee.
That's for sure.
I know that it's out there. I want to see it, but the ability for me to carve out 3 hours just for the film, not including travel time and that, you know, and that's the sort of film where, you know, my wife's got to be in the right mood.
Yeah.
You know, like there's some, like she'll see something funny or fluffy, you know, without really needing to be in the right mood, but like Valley of Elah, I want to see, but she's got to be in the right mood for that. And I totally understand. I don't want to drag her off to a downer film or a really long artsy film if she's not up for it.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
And so it's extra hard to schedule a film like that. That's as beautiful as I know it's going to be on a big screen. I'm scared that that's going to be more of a DVD.
Yeah, well, having seen it, I don't know. It's hard to say. I liked it, but it's hard to say.
So. What? Oh, Elah?
Yeah,
I was talking about Jesse James.
No, I definitely want to see that on the big screen. That said,
To me, Elah, it would be great to see on the big screen, but it's not losing as much if you see it on DVD, whereas The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward.
If I haven't seen it in the first 2 weeks, it becomes about an 80% proposition I'll see it on DVD.
I'm looking down and seeing Michael Clayton and thinking, you know, that's clearly something that doesn't need to be seen on a big screen.
No,
and
but I want to see it. I've heard these great reviews. The thing is, it's not playing here yet. It's like got some platform release.
Limited release. But yeah, it's the sort of thing where like you want to encourage people making just straight up drama films.
Yep.
You know, where there's no gigantic hook. It's got George Clooney and Tilda Swinton, which I'm sure 99% of the population has no idea who that is.
Yeah.
You know, it's got Sidney Pollack, and it really does look like a good drama film, but there's definitely a sense that there's fewer and fewer of those, and by God, you need to support the good old fashioned drama.
have you seen any of the previews for that Tom Cruise, Meryl Streep, Plowshares into Swords, like something for something. It's about...
Well, there's Lions for Lambs.
Yeah, Lions for Lambs. That's
no,
one.
I did see a preview for Rendition yesterday.
That one looked not bad, actually. Well, it was weird. It's like, God, is that Reese Witherspoon? I guess it is.
Well, I was looking at it, and I thought, is this the Tom Cruise one?
No.
And I was confused because, anyway, the rendition one looks interesting, but it looks a little, I don't know. I don't see a compelling reason to see it because, you know, I...
Well, I need to read reviews, but I thought the preview was pretty good.
Well, no, I mean, for me, it's one of those, I've read all of the, you know, I'm up on the lefty political blogs, and so I feel like I'm pretty tuned into the,
oh, no. You sound
the outrages
like the,
surrounding rendition, and it's like, oh, I don't...
You sound like the who was it, Wells or Poland was bemoaning the reviewer that made the announcement, I'm a lefty, I'm this and that, but I don't want to see any of these Iraq movies coming down the pike.
Well, no, for me it's not that. It's just that this particular one doesn't look like it's...
Yeah.
I mean, I'll need to see an actual trailer. I think I just saw a commercial.
Yeah.
Well, see, for me, I do want to see Valley of Elah. I do want to see the documentary that we bounced around, the No End in Sight.
Yeah.
I do want to see that because, that to me, that looks like it's bringing something, even though I'm, you know, to me, I know a lot of the facts. I haven't seen it presented in that manner when you're dealing with people that were there. And the,
yeah.
You know, the hook with that is, with that particular movie is that it's from the mouths of the people involved, and it's also coming from the perspective of not having an agenda, really just, here's what happened, and not, my God, isn't that horrible, because the implication is when you hear just what happened flat out, it's pretty clear that it's horrible, but it's not beating you over the head with it.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's just the rendition just doesn't look like, again, from one commercial, that interesting a film.
Well, it'd be interesting what you think of the Lions for Lambs trailer, because from my perspective, it just looks awful. I have no sense of the movie other than it's pretty clear part of the movie takes place with some senator playing Tom Cruise and a reporter doing a story about some decision to go to war, and it's and another story is about these people, idealistic people that go to war, and then I guess they tell parallel stories, but for the life of me, the trailer makes it look like this was the first United Artists film that was kind of greenlit by Tom Cruise, so Tom Cruise has to shoehorn himself into it to help make sure it's a success, and it looks very much like the only scenes you see with Tom Cruise and Meryl Streep are them sitting together talking into an office. It's the most boring thing ever, and you get the distinct impression that's the only, I mean, they probably spent a day filming their shots just to squeeze them in this movie. I mean, that's the impression the trailer gives. No Tom Cruise running, no nothing and anything else, and it looks awful. And I don't know, maybe it'll work within the context of the movie, but in terms of the trailer, it just looks like they're trying to squeeze star power out of an extended cameo.
Yeah,
and,
to me, I haven't seen the trailer or a commercial for that one, and I'm not terribly interested, although isn't Robert Redford involved in that one?
Yeah, didn't he direct it? I think he directed it or he's in it or something. I think he might have directed it. But it just...
That actually increases my interest.
Yeah, well, he's directed some great movies and some lame movies. But that said, it was just... the trailer is bad, bad, bad. I mean, it just looks... it almost looks like they're trying to hide something. But anyway.
So what did I actually have? I've got like three things on my list.
Well, there's lots of huge news. Bungie
okay,
and Microsoft?
That's actually number two on my list.
Okay, well, let's talk about it.
So the news is...
Well, it had been rumored, very quietly, it had been rumored by a bunch of sites about a week ago, and your first thought was, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard, until they confirmed the rumor. Anyway, go ahead.
So the news is that Bungie and Microsoft are, quote, evolving their relationship, unquote.
That would be the Major Nelson way of describing it.
No, that's the press release way of describing
well,
it.
Well, yeah, he posted on his press release, or on his site, too.
So basically what's happening, Bungie is, basically, honestly, if you really look at what's going on, the only thing that's happening is that Bungie is stepping out to be a mostly independent studio again. And so, you know, so
that's
they're
the
sort of divorcing
happening.
Themselves from Microsoft, but not completely if you really look at what's going on, because A, Microsoft keeps an equity stake. I don't know the percentage. I don't know if that's been revealed yet. It sounds like Microsoft gets first first right of refusal on any games that Bungie is producing.
Yep.
I mean, really, it sounds like there's two main things going on, and one is that Bungie gets more creative control over how they operate. And the other thing is that they now have the ability to create games for things other than the 360.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Windows, Vista, whatever, games for Windows. And because, you know, it really seems like that's not a horrible thing. I mean, it's, you know, I was kind of going back and forth with my buddy that works there at Microsoft. He's not connected with Xbox at all.
Yep.
And, you know, going back and forth, this was kind of a weird rumor. And my take on it was, well, from my perspective, if Bungie was for sale as an independent studio, Microsoft would probably want to buy them.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's why it didn't make sense. But, of course, you don't know the Bungie side of things and how they feel about it. And they're thinking, well, my God, we just made this game that has made $300 million, and how much of that are we actually seeing it?
Well,
my
sense was that was part of it. But my sense was that this shows the power of individuals in a corporation and how little the actual corporation can matter. Because effectively, my understanding, I may be wrong in this, Microsoft owned Bungie pretty much lock, stop, and barrel. They paid like $40 million for Bungie like 7 years ago. And they owned them completely and outright. So you'd have to say, okay, so what in the world is the point to Microsoft just saying, okay, you can leave and do this, and we're going to get rights to this, what in the world? And my take would be, because the one thing Bungie had was a whole bunch of programmers that were locked up through the Halo 3 project, and the minute it was over, they could all do whatever the hell they wanted. And at that point, there would be no Bungie. Because so basically, Microsoft probably realized that, you know what, there's not going to be a Bungie in the way we want it, so we are going to have to work out a deal and let these people that work for Bungie essentially become Bungie and maintain that relationship and let them flex their creative muscles.
You're exactly right, but you're not saying it straight out, which is that all of these people would have quit and started their own studio.
It would be like if people at Pixar were all ticked off. I mean, literally, most of Pixar's animators and John Lasseter were picked off. Now, John Lasseter technically isn't Pixar, but I'm sure if John Lasseter and everybody at Pixar said, damn it, we want to do our own thing, they probably would be in a pretty strong case, because people recognize it's not Pixar as much as it is these individuals. That's my take.
No, and really, that's correct.
Which is stunning how a company like Microsoft can buy an incredible developer, but really not hold many cards in a sense. I suppose the only thing they could have done, which is traditional in radio and stuff, which is if you hire like a radio team, you lock them all up into differently ending contracts. But I don't know.
I do think it's a bit of a unique situation in that almost everybody, let me qualify that. Gamers know about Bungie.
Yeah.
They know about Bungie as a development studio, and they know how integral Bungie is to Halo, how those two things really go together. And I really don't think that you have quite as much of that in other situations. As an example, Bizarre Studios was sold to Activision.
Yeah.
And they're the people that do Project Gotham Racing.
Yep.
And so there's some chatter about, oh, okay, so who's going to take over PGR now, because that intellectual property remains with Microsoft. So Microsoft will assign Project Gotham Racing to one of their other studios or have someone else bid for it. But, you know, there's some discussion about that, but nobody's like making a big deal about it. They're like, oh, okay, well, Bizarre did a good job, and I guess we'll see. So, you know, and, you know, there's a few other examples, like, you know, Electronic Arts with Madden, or the people that do Grand Theft Auto. Is that Rare or Take-Two?
It's Rockstar Games, and then Take-Two's the publisher.
I mean, so there's definitely a level of where people really tie in the studio with the games. But on the other hand, I think there's another level where, like, Crackdown. I don't know who did Crackdown. I don't care. Or, you know, Forza.
Microsoft does because they didn't think it was going to be a success, and everybody's all upset because they moved on to other projects when really there should be Crackdown 2 in the heavy-duty pipeline.
I mean, basically, my whole point is that I think Bungie had a lot more name recognition than some of the other studios.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been a much bigger deal if all the people from Bungie had left to form their own studio than if something equivalent had happened, like if all the people from Bizarre left to form their own studio. I don't think it would get near the attention.
No, I agree. It's because of
the biggest game in history. So I think that impacts what's going on. And I think, you know, if that's what Microsoft was looking at, I have to give them a lot of credit for saying, you know what, this is the best thing to do, and not being stubborn and saying, no, we're going to make you quit and form your own studio and get all this bad blood going.
Yeah.
So I think it's really, you know, if that's what Microsoft is looking at, I have to give them a lot of credit and saying, well, you know what, this is the best of a weird situation.
I think the most amazing thing is it's clearly been coming down the pike for an extremely long time, and there's almost no chance that, I mean, and what's amazing is I have not heard a hint of this, but clearly all parties agreed, have been working on this, talking about it, said not a word till after the release because we don't want to do anything to jeopardize the release, but there's no way this has not been something coming down the pike for months, if not over a year or something, which I find amazing that they, you think that they just put this together last week?
Well, no, not last week, because clearly when you're dealing with things like intellectual property and who owns what and who gets the rights to what, that takes a while to work out. But
they had to have been, first of all, just people being frustrated, people being goofy about it, working on this project. I mean, you can just read, when you read between the lines, reading interviews of Bungie people, I mean, they're sort of melancholy and not even really being as positive about Halo 3 as they can be. They're just sort of saying, yeah, I'm playing, it's a good game, I've, well, of course, but, you know, and it's just, I mean, it's pretty clear that they've been thinking about it, and the fact that they knew that they were going to separate probably made the whole prospect more palatable to finish the job, but I don't know.
The one thing about it that I find weird, and this is probably from too restrictive a perspective, is that in looking at their physical situation, because they got a separate building down in Kirkland, that was remodeled for them, I wonder how easy it will be to develop for other platforms. You know, especially because it looks like they've got, to me, it looks like they're full to the brim. Like, they don't have any extra space just developing for the 360.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they want to expand or move into a different thing, or if I just am not reading that right, and that you can just reconfigure very easily to develop for multiple platforms. But I, you know, I'm looking at some of the documentaries on the second disc on the limited edition Halo 3 thing.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's clearly a playtesting room for them to internally do multiplayer, and they've got like, you know, 15 or 20 things in this room, and it just looks so incredibly cramped. And I don't, you know, maybe, I don't know much about game testing or game developing, but I look at that and I think, well, geez, if they're cramped just developing for the 360, how are they going to develop for the PS3 or the, maybe that's just a really, you know, blinders on weird way of looking at it, but that's just one thought.
For whatever reason, my take, and this may be wrong, but my take on it, were I in Bungie's shoes, I would stick with what I know and realize our talent lies in developing cool properties, fully realizing them, and like in terms of the PS3, it's not, maybe this is not the right thing, but have another developer port your game. That's where I would do it.
Pimps at sea, my brother.
Pardon?
Pimps at sea.
So, anyway, it was big news. And also the other thing that was interesting was, for whatever reason, at the same point, all of a sudden, for whatever reason, as all this was coming down, you started to see actual video of people playing the famous supposed non-existent Halo DS, Nintendo DS game. Clearly this was somewhat tied together, and it looked awesome, the video.
Huh? I don't know. The official response is always, we never did anything with it. That didn't mean that somebody else didn't take steps without
No, what they're saying is that it was done as a it was, they were asking people, and the way the guy described it, he was very cagey, but he was described it as, it was done something as a test project, a proof of concept or something. My point being is that obviously, I mean, my point was the assumption for me was the reason it was probably killed in the first place. If it was, because I'm looking, I'm going, holy geez, that would make me buy a DS. Nothing else has ever made me interested in a DS. That, watching that made me really interested in the DS. So I'm going, and I'm sure Microsoft realized that, and I'm sure they probably thought, why branch out and get away from Xbox 360? So I'm just wondering if that was part of this frustration here to, for Bungie going, we're tied to one thing and we could actually branch out with this property, and just not wanting to do that. So I don't know. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting that that, those videos, cause they, I remember people talking about that about a year ago, and all of a sudden, and you never hear anything since, and all of a sudden those videos come out right when all this is coming down the pike. I mean, I don't know what else to say about that other than I just found it, the timing, interesting. And it looked cool. I mean, I had no interest in Nintendo DS. In fact, I thought the graphics were much worse, and then I saw that video and thought, wow, this is pretty good. So.
I haven't watched the video, so.
Yeah. Dude, you've got to watch the video, man. It's like you're playing Halo there on this damn little thing, and it looks good. You, go to joystick.com. I think they have it on there. I think that's where I saw it.
It's not that I can't find it. I just, as of yet, have, you know, either no time or no interest in watching it. So. Okay.
Well, looking at that, tell me if you, I mean, I don't know if you're like me. I have no friggin' interest in the Nintendo. I was kind of mildly interested in the PSP just because of the quality, but it sort of failed to deliver anything. But watching this thing, I immediately thought, damn, if that thing came to the Nintendo, it would be a reason for me to buy the DS.
I already have a DS.
Yeah, well, I have no interest in one. I'm just not into that.
As you've been saying.
Yeah, so that gave me the interest.
Let me get back to TV for a second. So I've been really busy at work today, the past while, which has made it very tough to keep up to date on the Daily Show.
Yeah.
But we caught up with a bunch of them last night, and they showed something. It was one of their, it's funny because sometimes, you know, they'll come back from commercial and they'll do a quick 2-minute bit and then go back to commercial.
Yeah.
And this was one of those bits, and it was the CW had a, like a new entertainment news type show, entertainment news magazine that was commercial free.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay, so they say, but we think we figured out how they managed to pay the bills. And so they cut to this thing, you know, and it's two hosts in a, you know, relatively generic set kind of talking around and, you know, oh, and Halo 3 is out and, you know, thanks to our friends at Walmart, we've got the hookup on an early copy. And they do like three or four other video cuts, and it's always, thanks to our friends at Walmart, Walmart got us the hookup.
Yeah.
Walmart this, Walmart that. And it's so horrendous to watch. You know, it would be...
Is it any worse, though, than having it be filled with commercials that are from Walmart?
Well, to me, it's, you know, they're trying to make it look natural, like, oh, yeah, I was just down at Walmart and got this. Why not? It, to me, it's much more palatable to say, you know, have a Walmart logo on the screen the whole time,
yeah,
instead of like a network bug, or have Walmart be, you know, on incorporated into the studio set,
yeah,
or have it be, you know, Walmart presents this generic entertainment news show that nobody will watch ever. You know, because then it's up front, and I'm totally fine with that. But to try and, you know, shoehorn this in every sentence is insulting, and I
imagine we're in the, I mean, we're definitely in the first few years of them, of it all shaken out, how to make sure advertisers can get in a world of TiVo, and a lot of them are like what you're describing here, just painfully shoehorned, like we're talking last week about the new Rogue and Heroes, which,
yeah,
to me felt very shoehorned in, but I agree with you to a certain extent. We should be going back to like they were in the
Alka-Seltzer presents the...
exactly, and then, yeah, I know what's wrong with that. I like that actually.
Yeah, and I yeah, I agree. I think this awkward shoehorning in just does more damage.
Yeah.
Not that I was going to shop at Walmart anyway, but anyway, I just found that interesting.
I don't know if you listened to the business podcast this week? It's really good. It's with the
Mad Men one.
Yeah, with Matt Wiener.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was so interesting to him to talk about product placement, how it relates to his show, and how he understands it. He doesn't have a problem with it, and how the process works. And for his particular show, what I thought was interesting was the problems on network TV, how they come in and it's not so much product placement, how they come and tell you. You can't do something because, mostly for competitors, you can't say, I'll have a Coke. And it's not because Coke has paid you, it's because Pepsi may be advertising and you get ticked off. And then
right.
There's lists of words I didn't even realize. I mean, I know about Jell-O, but I had no idea Dumpster was a brand name. You can't use the word dumpster. And he says, you know, at The Sopranos, it never became an issue. And Mad Men, it was interesting how they deal with that because they're dealing with fake campaigns for extremely real historical products. And they couldn't get Maybelline on board for this lipstick thing, but they've got Jack Daniels on. And then they have, they did a campaign, I think it was for Lucky Strikes. And it was just really interesting to see how it works and to see, I just kind of assumed the creatives get really upset about product placement. And he's gone, especially for him, he's gone, no, I want it to be natural, but I'm not. I mean, he just sort of accepts it and understands where it's coming from. And listen to his perspective. I was pretty much won over by that because with his show, it's never forced. Even with like the Jack Daniels, he says, I have no idea how much they got paid for that. But I had to put it in three times. They had to have approval, and it was no big deal. And I tell you, on that show, it seemed perfectly natural. In fact, it would have seemed more unnatural had they not used a brand in those cases.
Well, to me, it's the quality of the writing that determines, how well that works. And there are times when it's very well done, and clearly times when Walmart got us the hookup.
Walmart got us the hookup. Speaking of Mad Men, we haven't really talked about it for me, but I did watch the whole series this year. Definitely like the best show of the last couple of years. What an awesome, awesome show. I can't wait for it to come back. I'm not quite sure. It looks so good and seems to have such good production values. The actors are all no names, but I don't know how they can afford it because my understanding is it's the biggest show in the history of AMC, but that works out to like a million viewers a show. And I'm thinking a million viewers, which is great, but that's painfully small considering how much they're pouring into this show. So I don't know where they make money. They're clearly losing money but generating cachet and buzz for the network, but I don't know how long that'll keep up. But hopefully it will keep up for at least a couple seasons because it's a really great evocation of the era and the time, and it's weird to think it's like taking place like 50 years ago because it feels relatively contemporary, but it's a great, great series. Did you ever see any of Mad Men?
Nope.
It's one of those things, if you get bored and you see the DVD and you're thinking, well, I've got an afternoon, I'll watch half of this series. I mean, it's freaking great.
I mean, to me, the problem is I just don't have that free time. I'm trying really.
You need a multitask like me.
What's that?
You need a multitask like me. I watched half of that while playing Halo and BioShock.
Yeah, see, I like to actually focus.
I focus one part of my brain on BioShock, and the other part is focusing out of the corner of my eye on the latest episode of Mad Men running on my iTunes.
Anyway.
Speaking of iTunes, did you see that they claim they're gearing up for this announcement that they're going to start pumping out HD content finally?
No, I missed that. Where did you see that?
In a couple places, and they I can't remember where, but they, I think on Dig and stuff, and they're implying that their October announcement is going to announce that where they can, you know, there's all this knock against the Apple TV has been consigned to just a hobby, but they want to turn into a real workhorse, whatever. And I don't know anything about that other than it's pretty clear by Christmas if they're going to make this announcement in October, it's designed to. They probably will have a pretty big push to use this as a perfect companion to your new HD sets this Christmas.
Well, that'd be good if they did something.
My only thing is, I've ended up deleting, because I never have space, deleting so much of this stuff I buy on iTunes. And at some point, tell me if this is bad or wrong, I'm contemplating calling Apple and saying, oh, my hard drive died and all that stuff I bought, you know, so they can let me re-download it all, and then I'll store it somewhere. But I've got, like the entire seasons of Weeds, the entire series of Mad Men, the entire, like, 20 or probably 100 Daily Show, South Parks, everyone I've deleted because I was too lazy to make a backup or couldn't do it, you know. So I'm thinking about just telling them that so I can re-download. But by the same token, I'm thinking I probably have downloaded a terabyte of stuff from them and purchased, like, a terabyte. I don't even know if I'd have room for all that, but I guess I'll have to make room.
I don't know how to respond for that. I'm not going to advise you to lie.
I wouldn't lie. I mean, my hard drive is screwed up. So, but anyway, needless to say, it is stuff I've purchased. It is stuff I have not shared in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
You would think they would support behavior like that rather than me going and finding it on BitTorrent like other folks that we all know, which I've never done, ever.
I did actually just think of a bit of movie news.
What's that?
During an interview, Alan Tudyk has announced that there is a possibility of a Serenity sequel.
Yeah, but did you read some of the stuff that came out after that?
The thing on Ain't It Cool News, which completely missed the point of Alan's comment.
Well, to a certain extent, you could see what they were saying. Essentially, he was saying, well, this one's doing really well, so that's making them talk about putting out another one, and somebody later said, you know, we think he may have actually been talking about just putting out another DVD.
No. If you look at Alan's comment, it's clear that he made two separate statements.
Okay.
And I think it was Moriarty or one of the Ain't It Cool posters completely misread what was going on.
Yeah.
So basically, Alan Tudyk says, and I wish I knew how to properly pronounce his name.
Tudyk.
I'm sure that's how you would go.
Yeah.
He played Watch on Firefly and Serenity, and he said that the first one, the first DVD sold very well, which was why Universal decided to go for a special edition and milk that cow for a little bit, and it has been selling very, very well. And so he said because of the high sales of the second DVD, the special edition version, that there is now some talk that, oh, maybe we can do a sequel, maybe that would make sense. And now whether that means, you know, theatrical or direct to DVD, you know, no one's far enough along for that. But now people are saying, okay, that both DVDs have sold well enough that maybe we should seriously look at a sequel.
Yeah.
You know, he's not saying it's definitely happening. Joss Whedon hasn't commented yet beyond, in San Diego when I saw him, and he said, you know what, if it sells really well,
You fanboys and you're grasping at snippets.
And that's fine, because I'm taking it from the perspective of if it happens, great, but, you know, there's some progress. And because to me, all of these characters, well, all of the actors and Joss Whedon love this project, and because Joss Whedon is so into it, he will, if there's a possibility of making it happen, he will find a way to make it work.
Yeah.
As opposed to if it's just some generic property, you know, like Star Trek, which is so completely owned by Paramount, you know, it's got nothing to do with, you know, because Gene Roddenberry is not around anymore. There isn't really one person, you know, that if they want to make something happen, they will make it happen.
Yeah.
You know, with Star Trek, it's all, if there's a business proposition, if we can make money around it, we will make it happen. So my perspective is if Joss Whedon can find a viable way to make it happen, and Universal saying, you know, giving him some rope and saying, okay, maybe we'll, you know, make it happen for $10 million.
Yeah.
You know, Joss Whedon will find a quality way to do it.
Hmm.
And so to me, it's encouraging. But again, I'm not looking at it like, oh, it's definitely going to happen. He didn't say there's definitely going to be a sequel.
I know, dude. Did you hear the latest about the Knight Rider? stuff.
I heard that there's now there's two different projects going on. Well, what we talked about last week and something else.
Well, apparently, like they're talking about making a movie of Knight Rider, and then so what happens is apparently the guy who owns the rights to the movies does not own the rights to the TV series. So NBC is gone. Well, wait a second. We want it, and they're clearly announcing and putting a product into, like, a la Bionic Woman, but they're putting it into production essentially to possibly screw over the movie project, because they figure if they can do a TV series, they can platform that into a movie, and they're all in this race to develop something, but they're literally totally separate projects, not together, not connected.
Right.
And which will probably mean they'll screw each other's projects up totally, which I find interesting.
On a somewhat related note, that actually impacts Battlestar Galactica, because Glenn Larson actually owns the rights to movies, Battlestar Galactica movies, quote unquote.
Yep, yep.
So when they made this 2-hour special, this Battlestar Galactica Razor, which they're releasing in November, what they wanted to do was release that as a direct to DVD thing first, and then throw it on TV.
Yep.
Well, when you do that, it actually is considered a movie.
It qualifies as a movie.
And so that trips over the rights that I think Glenn Larson has. So now they've got to actually broadcast it on TV on the Science Fiction Channel first. Then they can release it on DVD. So it's interesting how rights like that work when you have different people holding different aspects of the rights.
Yeah.
You know, and part of that, that's the whole Hobbit thing and different studios owning different aspects of rights to the Hobbit. And, I don't want to get into a Hobbit discussion now, but.
Did you see the trailer for Sweeney Todd that was floating around?
Nope.
It's it's the Tim Burton thing that has those weird posters, which I thought looked great.
Well, I know exactly what it is.
Yeah, but
even though I've heard it's like not going in a musical direction,
it's pretty clearly going in a musical direction. They didn't avoid that in the trailer, which was great because I had forgotten that this was a musical. Honestly,
I phrased it poorly. What I should have said was that I had read some quotes from Stephen Sondheim where they're saying they're not faithfully following the musical. They're going in a different direction. But to me, anything musical based, I just have so little interest in.
Well,
I don't care. I don't want people breaking out in song.
Okay. Well, I, on the other hand, I like musicals if done well. That said, I could care less whether they're faithful to this or that. I just want the movie to stand on its own. What I was intrigued by was they weren't avoiding that in the trailer. Basically, to a certain extent, they tell the story of Sweeney Todd, where he's this young, handsome, dashing guy that has something happen to him, and then he decides to become a killer. But halfway through the trailer, he breaks out into song, and it was like, in the past, it was like foreign movies. Musicals, when they would put together a trailer for a musical, often there literally would be no singing in it. They would just show the other stuff. And it's like a foreign movie, they'd show these trailers, and you never have any talking because they'd want to avoid the fact that people actually are speaking a foreign language in it. And this is one where they kind of really let into it. And it looked great. It looked like pure Tim Burton, but it looked great. And Johnny Depp looked fabulous. I mean, it just looked freaking awesome. I do like some musicals. I hate some, but I like others. I loved Moulin Rouge. I liked, now I'm going to draw a blank at a bunch of them, but I do like some of them. And I'm definitely looking forward to this on DVD 6 months after it gets out of theaters.
Okay. We have missed another gigantic story.
What's that?
The new Zunes.
The what? Oh, the new Zunes. Yeah, that's a monster story taking over America. It's bigger than Halo 3.
it's one of those things where it's like, everyone says Microsoft is a 3.0 company. Like, don't pay any attention to anything they do until they're on the third version. If Microsoft decides to stick with the Zune, sooner or later it'll be good.
As a couple things did say, they did do some things right. They finally support video podcasts. But the problem
podcasts
is they don't support it. That's the that's the unique selling proposition of Apple is iTunes and how perfect it is for subscribing to podcasts. And I don't know how it works with Zoom, but I imagine it's a more awkward solution. You're using some third-party app. It's, you might have to manually do them. I don't know. All I know is with iTunes, I just don't think about it. It just uploads them. I connect it up, and yay.
Well, to me, I mean, the thing about the Zoom is they've got a lot of work to overcome the perception that they are a joke.
Yeah.
Because it is every time anybody talks about a Zoom and it's not Jay Allard or Bill Gates, they're snickering. You know, Leo Laporte and all the tech podcasts he does.
And he actually was somewhat nice about the thing, but it's always
he was because, and you know, the thing they all tend to appreciate is this having the option for a subscription model of music and really enjoying having that option.
Yeah, I agree.
But to me, it's every time I hear anybody talk about it, you know, the Penny Arcade guys, you know, my God, that comment that Tycho had about as I read about the iPhone, I looked at my Zoom and gazed upon the exact ratio of obsolescence. That is such a brilliant line, and it stuck with me. And to me, it's just the Zoom is such a non-factor.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say it won't be. You know, they keep plugging away. They keep making it better. They keep improving it. That's fine. But they, I don't know how you, you know, it's tricky how you overcome this perception that it's a joke.
By making a better product from the get-go.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. That's how. But it's, you know, it's sort of related to, like, American cars. You know, apparently, you know, some of the Fords and GMs that are coming out now are actually pretty good.
Yeah, but literally for the last 10 years, they've drastically increased
the
quality.
Well, I wouldn't even say, well, like, to me, a lot of it has to do with the interiors. You get in the interior and you look around.
Yeah.
And, like, really, up until some of the, you know, when you're not talking about the luxury, you know, like Cadillac or whatever, but you get into, like, a regular Ford or a GM and you look around the interior and you think, oh, my God, this is so nickel, this is so bottom of the barrel, and so clearly how can we do this for the least amount of money possible? And you compare that with getting in a Volkswagen and or an out, well, same company, an Audi, but that's a higher end line. But
well,
you know,
the irony
quality
is
the fit and finish.
But the irony is the Volkswagen has been hammered for the last 10 years just for the quality. I mean, literally
not for their interior quality.
I don't know.
If they're having engine or transmission issues,
no,
that's something different. No.
It's been all of them, dude.
I totally take issue with that.
Holly's Volkswagen, which is just a piece of crap with the parts falling off on the inside. I mean, I don't know. Volkswagen's been hammered for overall quality issues.
I disagree with the interior, but.
Suffice it to say, I haven't owned or rarely stepped into a car made after 1980, so it's all foreign to me. I don't know the difference between any of them. Don't really care.
Well, but I mean, it's the same issue where they have to overcome this perception that American cars suck.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only way you do that is by making cars that don't suck. But, you know, you still, what is GM or Ford going to have to do for me to seriously look at one of their cars? You know, and it's not just the fact that it would maybe be a good car in and of itself, but I don't want to be made fun of by all of my car guy friends.
Yeah.
You know, which sounds shallow, but, you know, there's something to that.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the quality has to be around there long enough so that they acknowledge that it was a viable choice, you know, so that they don't immediately feel compelled to make fun of. Or, you know, if someone I know buys an American car, I don't immediately feel compelled to make fun of them.
Yeah, I hear you. I have no idea. I mean, if I were to buy a new car, I mean, it almost certainly would be like a Prius or something that's environmentally friendly, but it's not even in my thought process to buy a new car, so I wouldn't even know, and I wouldn't know to make fun of somebody. The only time I ever made fun of somebody was when I thought the names sounded gay. Our friend Fred was, you know, his company gave them a Chrysler Sebring. And I know the name Sebring, and I know where it comes from, but it just sounds effeminate to me. So I make fun of him for it. But it's a great car, actually. And well, I'll tell you.
More than that's the car Michael had on The Office. So.
Yeah, I know. There you go. So that just narrows it right down. But I'll tell you, actually, that said, I forgot. I drove some of those, like I drove the 300 when I was in Las Vegas, and I've seen those new Chargers. I find them cool looking. I don't know what the interior looks like, but I wouldn't be embarrassed to drive one of those cars. I mean, they looked cool, and that 300 was a sweet ride. I mean, interior and exterior. I felt like it was in like a mafia car. I mean, the thing was awesome. But anyway, I don't know. I'm just not. I just could care less. Doesn't matter to me. speaking of 300. Oh well, we can talk about this, but I want to talk about the commentary track for 300.
I saw your email and I haven't read it.
Well, my email said that the commentary track for the 300 was quite possibly the worst commentary track in the history of mankind.
Having heard Zack Snyder do his Watchmen presentation, I'm not surprised.
Wow, I mean, it was unbelievable. Not only, I mean, I was looking on the DVD and it goes Zack Snyder, and then it has like the director of the photography, the writer, you know, and like one other person, I think, and I'm thinking, wow, let's hope it's not one of those ones where they edit a bunch together, but they're all in the room sharing stories. There it is, literally 20% talking, 80% crickets. And when they're talking, it is consistently, that scene there, that's all blue screen, and that little element there, nothing. And the writer and nobody, I mean, this is a thing based on history with a real story with total fantastical elements. It'd be the perfect opportunity to talk about what drove their interest, to talk about Frank Miller. It was so boring. It was beyond awful. And the movie's visually beautiful and it's an interesting and you know, I mean, I didn't like the movie that much, but I didn't hate it. But the commentary was terrible. And you think with somebody as much creativity as these guys clearly have, something else would have come out. And also, you got to think, you know, we've been making DVDs for 10 years, commentary tracks for 10 years. There's a system. You have somebody in another room and they've got a computer and they're typing in, you know, prompting questions. Talk about hiring Gerard Butler. Talk about your vision for them. I mean, there's got to be something. They had nothing prompting them.
Yeah, it's funny how you can have, you know, Yeah, it's funny that Zack Snyder clearly lacks that gene or that that item.
I don't know how you got to assume a lot of these people, they get into these roles because they do really good in a pitch meeting. They go and show, and he clearly must have had some kind of show reel overcame.
He might be really good one-on-one. Because there are people that are like that. They're good one-on-one, and you get in a group, and suddenly it's not.
Well, he was the most colorless person. I mean, it just, and that said, I'm not trying to badmouth him. I mean, I think he's clearly a fine director and a clear visionary, but in terms of commentary tracks, I would literally, the next movie that comes out that he is doing, I'm going to buy the movie only because I'm interested in the movie, because I probably will not listen to the commentary track. And knowing me, I listen to that first often. I'll listen to the commentary before I even see the movie sometimes. So that's saying something. Anyway, terrible, terrible, terrible commentary track.
Which leads into the last thing on my list. Mm-hmm. You, my friend, have experienced the three red rings of death.
Oh, yeah, I did. Oh, God.
And I was always amazed that you hadn't had that, because when I looked at how you had your system set up, it always looked a little cramped, and I was always impressed that for whatever reason, it never overheated.
Well, the thing about it is there's like a ton of room behind you. It's like 2 feet behind the thing, so there's ambient air, but you're right, and it's right next to a receiver that pumps out heat. So I would have thought, but anyway, suffice it to say, it finally... And there was kind of hints, which I only realized later were hints when I was playing Halo, where the whole screen would go fuzzy and it would seize, and I just go and turn it off and turn it back on, but then it finally just died and I got those three rings, and it was funny because when I called the lady at Microsoft, this tech person, and was talking to her about it, and I had finished Halo, I was just basically, you know, raking up, you know, ranks and looking for a reason to stop playing, to tell you the honest truth, because I got so much else to do and I find myself playing Halo. And so she called me, and first of all, she was the first person I talked to that had finished Halo. Now, clearly a lot of people had finished Halo, but she was the first person. And what she was implying was everybody's really pissed off at her, because when they call, they're halfway through and they're finding it's going to take a month and a half to finish the game. And there I was, just pleasantly going, oh, whatever, send me the thing, kind of looking at it as a vacation from the Xbox. Not that I'm happy, but they still haven't sent me the box yet. She said it'd be here by this weekend, and it didn't come in. But
that's irritating. But I mean, to me, it's, well, A, I'm sorry your box died. B, I hate you because you're more than likely going to get one with an HDMI port.
If I'm lucky, or maybe the smaller chip.
Yeah, it seemed like those were just starting to sprinkle out.
Yeah.
So I think your odds of that are lower. I think you're much more likely to get an HDMI port. Yeah. And again, I hate you.
That said, feel free. If you'd like, we can switch Xboxes and you can have mine, because I will not be utilizing an HDMI port anytime soon, and you would immediately be able to utilize it. So if we get them, I'm more than happy to switch Xboxes with you.
We'll have to talk about that. Definitely. I mean, because then if something goes wrong with either of them, we'd have to swap them back.
Okay. Well, we'll figure that out. Oh, and the other thing that I was amazed at was she told me, okay, so your Xbox is, she said basically that, okay, so it starts, she implied and actually full out said that the warranty starts from 3 years from today, because this is when they put it in the system. Now, I don't know that that's true. I bought the thing a year ago.
I'm pretty sure she's wrong.
Wow. But she didn't even ask on when it was manufactured, when I purchased it, you know. That said, even 2 years from now was still great. So, but anyway, we can talk about it. It's up to you. It makes no difference to me, but you're right. We'll probably be ticked off if one of ours dies and we're thinking, that's my friend's, you know, and I can't play it. So.
Well, it's part of the problem you get when we've discussed it about when you the concept of upgrading a fixed console.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Anyway. Yeah, maybe I won't get lucky anyway, so maybe it's a moot point.
I kind of realized last week that this Tuesday is Orange Box Day.
I know. That's honestly kind of killing me. But then again, I've played the game, so I haven't. So some of the other ones I haven't. I'm most excited, and I can't find it anywhere to confirm that they have the commentary tracks on the Xbox version. If they do, I'm excited. If not, I'll be a little ticked. But yeah, it'll be a while for I'm doing that. But I'm just honestly really excited. I love getting into that world, man. That is an awesome, awesome company.
So yeah, I'm just going to roll on down to Best Buy after work on Tuesday.
Get yourself an Orange Box. It was weird. I've been seeing actual ads for it. It's so weird that the IP is so pronounced that they can advertise something as Orange Box and everybody can get excited about it. I mean, the ad, it's prominent, Orange Box. And then they talk about the different games in there, but it's like, wow, I'm seeing an actual TV ad for this. It was cool.
That's cool. I haven't seen any. I've seen the Team Fortress trailers that they've been releasing, which are so well done.
Tell me about it.
And so creative. And actually that's one aspect of it that makes me a little cranky. Is like all my friends are playing Team Fortress on the PC version.
Yeah, the old
version. And they're not going to probably get the 360 version. So that's a bit of a bummer. But
I know, because I don't think you can. I don't think they're compatible.
Oh, so did. As I'm sort of flipping around the net, did you see the John Stewart, Chris Matthews interview?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, and it just sort of devolved. I don't think he intended to start out eviscerating him, but it just kind of went down that path. And what was weird is I think John Stewart felt bad, because did you see, like, the next day where he mentions it and he said they called this the worst ever, but he holds up Chris Matthews' book like three separate times, almost like he felt bad or he felt like he's going to screw over guests if he treats him this way.
Mm-hmm.
And then he mentioned a previous review, but boy, I couldn't help but thinking, damn, John Stewart nailed it, because all these other people are treating Chris Matthews like this is a legitimate point, and John Stewart's going, no, this is a sad point you're making, this is an awful thing.
Yeah, it was very interesting, because there are certainly times when John Stewart is just will not roll. You know, he's not going to be a puffball. He'll say, here's what I think, and, I'm not just going to let you sell your book. You need to defend a point or two. And you saw it in that one. You saw it in that John McKay interview from back when.
Yeah.
And
of course, when he eviscerated Crossfire and got it kicked off the air.
Yeah. My God, he said he has Lynn Cheney on next week. What the heck is that going to be about?
Maybe he'll, that'll be interesting.
But it was really interesting to watch. My God. And the other big thing the Daily Show did was, the moment of Zen was there showing I think it was a Fox News person saying, shame on the Democrats for using children as a political stunt for that whole veto of the S-chip thing. And, of course, the moment of Zen was showing Bush next to the stem cell, the snowflake children kids. And you're just like, my God, why can't anybody else actually learn to use their video archives and call BS?
I know.
Why isn't the Daily Show the only people capable of doing that?
I know. People were pointing out that out last year, and you'd think some of the other news agencies would pick up a clue and start going, we have a bigger, deeper archive than the Daily Show. Why don't we just look it up and pull this out instead of just letting them say what they want to say? And that goes for the Democrats too. I mean, they'll say the stupidest stuff too. But why can't they just do this, And they don't. They leave it up to the Daily Show and thus marginalize it. That's what really sucks is the Daily Show, for how great it is, effectively marginalizes some of these things because it's not treated as seriously.
It's that ongoing discussion of the Daily Show and how brilliant it is and how, like when Fox canceled their half hour comedy hour thing.
The half hour comedy hour. Jesus. Did you ever watch any of the clips from that? It was so forced and painful. It was, and they were so obvious. It was like 20-year-old jokes. It was just terrible, and they just didn't get it. If they did it well, I'd probably give them props, but it was so bad.
Just something inherent about the fact that you can't do a conservative version of the Daily Show because it doesn't work, because you need the truth, the underlying basis of truth, and so much of what they're doing is based in BS.
Yeah, this is true.
So
you know how I'm watching TV these days? Let me tell you about how I saw these shows last week. So I saw the finale of Mad Men, and I downloaded that from iTunes. I watched The Office and 30 Rock and watched that on NBC.com. I watched CSI, their opening series on, or the opening of the season premiere on the on Juiced, that TV internet.
Oh, that's right. There's
thing.
A beta for that. The beta's now public.
Well, I've been running the beta for about 6 months, and now that it's
I didn't have an invite.
Geez, I'm sorry. I should have sent you one. But the thing is they've the thing about it is now that they're on, actually better channels are on, so you have things like the CSI channel and other stuff. That said, I think Juiced is a nightmare. It's this weird, totally non-intuitive interface, and I can never figure out what the hell I'm clicking on or whatever. But the fact is so I watched that way, and then I watched most of the Daily Show from the past week on ComedyCentral.com. So I've watched all of these new shows on, like, five different venues. Now, I would much rather have all watched it on a single kind of thing, like TV or like iTunes, but it didn't feel so bad going and searching around and finding it. I used to think that was the problem, and now it's not, which doesn't, to me, bode well, if I'm feeling that way, bode well for iTunes, because even though NBC is pulling their stuff off iTunes, I don't know, I found it pretty effectively, and I didn't actually have to spend money for it, and didn't mind that. I just had to sit through the same stupid ad for Progressive Insurance or whatever, but, wasn't bad at all. Quality looked great, watched it when I wanted to, right there on my computer while I was working. It was great.
Mazel tov.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's cool, and it'll be, interesting to see what develops as these options become available and they experiment around.
It's weird nowadays, the very minuscule few things that are not available is basically HBO stuff. You know, so if I want to watch The Sopranos, if I want to watch Flight of the Conchords or Curb Your Enthusiasm, that is not available. That is like the only thing I can think of floating around. Even now, even like Conan O'Brien is on full every night on NBC, so I can watch Conan O'Brien and I can avoid Jay Leno. You know, and I can watch what I like on Conan O'Brien, because I'd say Conan O'Brien, I watched it for the monologue and his bits, and every once in a while an interview, but for mostly the monologue and the bits. And once a week I can sit down and spend an hour and watch the monologue and the bits. It's like TiVo, you know, but I didn't pay for anything. So it's interesting. I'm excited the way entertainment is coming to me these days in a...
Well, that's good.
Yeah. You know. Anyway, so we're at 1 hour and 1 minute.
I've got nothing else.
What was the... Any big movies came out this week? Is anything coming up?
I don't think so. I was just on Fandango yesterday looking to see that.
I'm just looking for There Will Be Blood. That's the one I'm waiting to see. When is that coming out? Probably like December or something ridiculous.
No idea.
Oh, I know the movie. It was Heartbreak Kid came out. The one everybody hated, and then all of a sudden everybody decided, you know, this isn't so bad. So it's getting relatively good reviews, but nobody's going to see it, which is kind of...
Yeah, I don't care.
I don't know. I thought the trailer was funny, but I agree. I don't care. I haven't even bought a Ben Stiller movie, like, ever, so I have no interest. I was looking at Night of the Museum on the DVD racks going, boy, there's something I will never, ever, ever watch. So I could care less. And I kind of like Ben Stiller, but, yeah, who knows? Nothing coming out. Did you see that Owen Wilson showed up at the premiere of Darjeeling Limited?
Yeah,
that was cool. Good for him. I hope he's gets his act together, poor guy. Anyway, I don't know anything else.
All right, well... This rolling train of nothing is coming to an end.
Coming to a screeching halt, gone off the tracks. Yeah,
you guys rock at mustardamaze.com. And all right, we'll see you next week. I'm Matt.
I am Ricardo.
Thanks for listening.
I'll be into it.